Frank Buckley. Today, it's a real treat for a space nerd like me. We have two members of the NASA JPL team who will be instrumental in the success of the Mars 2020 Perseverance rover mission that's expected to land on the Red Planet on February 18th.
The spacecraft carrying the Perseverance rover will slow from more than 12,000 miles an hour to eventually 2 miles per hour before landing. During the powered descent, a sky crane will lower the rover on cords as it moves into position to the landing zone. Perseverance will detach from that jetpack, which will fly away and then make a landing a safe distance away from Perseverance. The entire entry, descent, and landing, the EDL, a 7-minute-long sequence done autonomously. And because it takes 11 minutes for a radio signal to travel from Mars to Earth, the mission team at JPL in Southern California will have to wait for those long several minutes to find out if the hundreds of things that must go right did go right, so the search for life on Mars can begin with Perseverance. Welcome to Frank Buckley Interviews. We are just days away from that exciting landing on Mars, and I am thrilled to welcome two crucial members of the JPL team and this mission to find life on Mars. We're going to talk to Alan Chen in just a moment. He's the guy in charge of that EDL, the entry, descent, and landing. But first, joining us right now is Katie Stack Morgan, PhD, Deputy Project Scientist of the Mars 2020 rover mission. Katie, thanks for joining us. As I told you off camera, I am so excited, and I can't imagine how excited you must feel.
Yes, we are very excited, but also very anxious. There's a lot riding on our landing on February 18th, so we are excited but very anxious too.
This mission's so exciting, and you know we talk about the fact that you are looking for life. This isn't just a mission to say, hey, we made it to Mars. You're actually searching for signs of life. What does that mean, and how will you conduct that search?
That's right. One of the major goals of the Perseverance rover mission is to seek signs of ancient life on Mars. And so we're looking for biosignatures or patterns or textures in the rocks on Mars that were left behind by life. And so we're looking for things like fossilized microbial mats, and we're going to use the instrument payload on board the Perseverance rover to seek these ancient signs of life.
That instrument payload is so interesting, the way you're going to drill down and save samples. Talk to us about that as we look at some of this terrific animation from JPL and NASA.
Yes, Perseverance is the first mission and the first step in an effort to bring samples from Mars back to Earth. And we've never done this before. And we'll be collecting samples with the Perseverance rover that have the best potential for containing these signs of ancient life and to tell us about the evolution of planets in our solar system. How did habitable worlds evolve over time? And we'll be able to answer some of these really fundamental questions when we get samples that Perseverance collects back to Earth.
I know you're not looking for little green men. It's not that kind of a search for life. But if the conditions 3.5 billion years ago were right for that kind of life, first of all, do we know if they could have sustained the kind of life that we think of? And if that life did exist, would there be any signature of that that you might find?
Everything that we know about ancient Mars tells us that the surface of Mars could have supported ancient life. We have all the basic ingredients for life. We have water, we have sources of energy, and we have sunlight, and all the basic building blocks of life were present. And we know that from previous Mars missions and other rovers and orbiters. And so we're optimistic that Mars was capable of supporting ancient life, and that ancient life might have left behind a sign in the rocks on Mars that Perseverance could go and find and collect. And so we're optimistic that there is ancient life on Mars to be found.
Mars is a big place. You have to first figure out where to go search. And I know a lot went into deciding this is the best possible place. Where did you choose to go, and why?
The Perseverance rover is headed to a very special place called Jezero Crater. And there are a lot of craters on Mars, but we know for sure that Jezero Crater once contained an ancient lake. And we have a river valley that went into the crater, and we also have one that went out. So we know that Jezero filled up like a bathtub and spilled over at some point. And we have preserved within a crater something called a delta, which forms when a river enters an open body of water. And deltas are fantastic places to search for signs of ancient life and organic matter. And we know that based on studies of deltas here on Earth. And so we're very optimistic that this is the right place to go to search for signs of ancient life.
I know that you took great pains to make sure that you didn't transport life to Mars, to make sure that there wasn't microbial stuff on the actual equipment. But how do you then, whatever you do find, how do you save it and preserve it? And then the intent is to get it back here, isn't that right?
That's right. And a lot of careful thought went into contamination and planetary protection. We want to make sure that we don't bring life to Mars. And we also want to make sure that if we find evidence for life in the samples that Perseverance collects, that we're confident that that life came from Mars, not from Earth. And so it's very important for us to preserve the scientific integrity of those samples. And a lot went into designing these tubes that the Perseverance rover carries that will protect those samples, those rocks and soils that we collect, and allow them to be kept on the Martian surface for years at a time until the follow-on mission can pick them up.
And another first that will happen during this mission, aren't you flying sort of like a helicopter on Mars?
Yes, that's right. Perseverance has along with it a buddy, the Ingenuity helicopter, and it will be the first time we operate a rotorcraft on another planet on the surface of Mars. And Ingenuity will do a series of test flights, really pioneering this method of robotic exploration with the eye towards future use of helicopters to explore other planets.
I know you're a scientist and a geologist and a PhD and all of that, but talk to me about the human part of this, because when I see, you know, photos from other rovers that are on Mars now, I get excited just as a citizen, as a person, as someone who has made this your life's work. When you think about the fact that something you touched is going to be on Mars, and that those images, do you ever transport yourself to Mars in your mind?
Oh yes, every day. Every time I see a new image from the surface of Mars, I just feel so amazed that I get to be a planetary explorer. We are so familiar with our own planet, and there are very few places left unexplored on Earth. But I have the opportunity every single day to explore a new part of the solar system that no one else has ever seen. And I feel incredibly lucky and honored that I get to do this work. And it is so exciting. And it's great to wake up every day and say, okay, we've got a new patch of Mars to explore.
It must be so exciting. Talk to me about this piece of this instrument on board called Sherlock.
Yes, Sherlock uses laser technology and spectroscopy to search for organics on the surface of Mars and to identify minerals. And what's really special about this instrument and some of the other instruments that Perseverance carries is that we can resolve exactly where those organics are. Previous rovers have analyzed the surface of Mars in kind of bulk quantities. So we can identify, yes, they're organics, but we don't know where they are in the sample. But Perseverance can make a little map of organics and minerals. And these are the kinds of tools that we use here on Earth to identify biosignatures in our own ancient Earth rock record.
How long will it be before you can definitively say, you know what, I think we found signatures of life?
Well, we're very hopeful with Perseverance that we will find a compelling potential biosignature, but it's very likely that we'll have to get the samples from Mars back to Earth to make that definitive conclusion. And that's what's so important about Mars sample return. The payload of Perseverance is really well suited to identifying potential biosignatures, but it'll likely take the full laboratory capabilities we have here on Earth to make that conclusive decision.
Which is how long?
Well, the first opportunities to send a follow-on mission to Mars to go pick up those samples happens in the 2026-2027 timeframe. So we may be looking at getting these samples back by something like 2030.
Wow. When you get the word that, yes, Perseverance has made it safely to the surface, what will that feel like for you?
Well, I will breathe a huge sigh of relief and probably give a big cheer and then be thinking, okay, well, let's find that data. What data have we gotten down? Because I want to look at that first image that we're going to take. Yeah. And so I think that's probably what I'll be feeling and doing as soon as we get that good word that we've landed successfully.
And is there a moment where there is, you know, for Alan, it's this idea of, did we land safely? For you, is there a make or break kind of moment like that? The first time the drill goes in, the first data that comes in. Is there a moment like that for you as a deputy project scientist?
Yes, I think that moment for us on the science side is really the first sample we acquire. When we successfully acquire our first sample, I think we'll all know that we're well on our way to accomplishing the reason Perseverance is there on Mars, and that's to collect samples. And so I think, and it's a very complex system that we have on the rover to collect the samples and keep them stored. So that'll be the big moment, I think, for us, is that first sample collection.
Do you have a prediction as to what it might look like when you finally have a chance to analyze the whatever it is the collection is? Do you have a sense, based on what we know about these kinds of conditions on Earth, what might it look like?
Yeah, so if we are able to find a sign of ancient life, it could look like something like these fossilized microbial mats that we have in our own Earth record. And they're very finely layered structures with interesting concentrations of different minerals. And so that's what we'll be looking for and using our analytical lab tools to search for that.
And one final question, and that is, when you went into this field and you started to work for JPL, did you ever think that maybe someday they would be saying, Katie Stack Morgan discovered life on another planet?
No, I don't think I ever dreamed of anything like that. But like a lot of jobs, you take it one day at a time. But it is fun to step back every once in a while and realize that you know, I have a potential to contribute to such a paradigm shifting discovery. And I, again, I'm so honored to be a part of that, and really excited and optimistic that this team and this rover is going to get that job done.
Well, we are honored to have you on the program. We are wishing you all the best, and we'll be watching along with everyone. That's Katie Stack Morgan, research scientist, deputy project scientist for Mars 2020 rover mission. Thanks for joining us. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the man in charge of the entry, descent, and landing. He's a systems engineer, Alan Chen, will tell us how Perseverance is going to land on Mars.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Outstanding NASA animation there as we take an inside look at the Mars 2020 Perseverance rover mission. We're joined now by systems engineer Al Chen at JPL, the guy running the EDL. That's the nail-biting entry, descent, and landing phase of the mission. Al, thanks for giving us some of your valuable time just a few days before that big moment.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, people take for granted that JPL and NASA can get us to Mars, but you know better than anyone, it's an almost impossible challenge. In fact, only 40% of Mars missions have made it to the surface successfully. I just wonder, on a personal level, it is so much on your shoulders. Are you nervous?
I think it's hard not to be nervous when you're thinking about what we're trying to do and the complexity of what it takes to land on Mars. I think, my team and I are definitely not sleeping that well. I'm trying to time we have left to make sure that we have a good day on the 18th.
They call that the 7 minutes from the time you hit the atmosphere at 12,000 miles an hour to the slow powered descent, and then finally at the soft landing at 2 miles an hour, as the 7 minutes of terror. Can you take us inside that 7 minutes from your perspective as we're going to be watching you on February 18th?
Sure. I mean, I think landing on Mars is all about finding a way to stop and stop in a safe place. As you mentioned, we come in screaming through the atmosphere at over 12,000 miles an hour, but need to touch down going a little less than 2 miles an hour to land safely. So what we're watching for is perseverance to use the atmosphere to slow down. First streaking across the sky, kind of like a Martian meteor, using the atmosphere to slow down with that frictional heating. Not only survive that intense heating and deceleration of entry, but also steer its way to the landing target with thrusters. That only gets us down to about supersonic speeds or so. Perseverance at that point needs to deploy a 70.5-foot diameter parachute while still traveling almost twice the speed of sound to slow down even further. While still slowing down the parachute, Perseverance needs to figure out where she is. So that means jettisoning the heat shield that protected it during entry from the heating, using a radar and a new system we call terrain relative navigation to figure out where she is. But even then, we're not going slow enough for a touchdown at that point on the parachute. Perseverance is still going at about 160 miles an hour when the parachute is done slowing it down. That's about as fast as a skydiver would be going if you jumped out of a plane here on Earth and headed straight down to the ground, head down, without a parachute. So that's when we light up those rockets and do powered descent. So we got to slow down from 160 miles an hour, fly to a place that is safe that we've identified using that terrain relative navigation system, and come straight down at about 2 miles an hour. And then we do the sky crane thing that we did for Curiosity, which is deploying that rover underneath the descent stage, our little rocket powered jetpack, deploying the wheels for the rover, which are our landing gear, and putting down safely right down in Jezero Crater in a safe spot.
And
all that has to happen without our help. It takes about 11 and a half minutes for radio waves to travel at the speed of light from Mars all the way to Earth, and another 11 and a half minutes for us to send commands back to the spacecraft. So we can't help Perseverance at all. We're just holding on and seeing what's going to happen. She's got to do it all on her own.
And as we were just looking at that tremendous animation with the sky crane, and to develop all of this technology, to operate it, to make sure this happens, we're talking to you, but I know that, is it hundreds of people who have gone into this mission?
I always like to say that we built Perseverance. I built Perseverance with 1,000 of my closest friends, really probably a couple thousand, spread out both at JPL and across the country. Many different NASA centers are involved, and lots of other people who have provided hardware at different companies have been a part of this mission. Especially given the challenges of the last year, everyone's really pitched in to make sure that we have the best chance of making it on February 18th.
Is your job done, Alan, when Perseverance sends its first imagery back to you and you've received it? Are you able to finally relax?
I lead the entry, descent, and landing team. So our job is to make sure that 7 minutes from the top of the atmosphere to safely down on the ground happens correctly. So you're right. My part of the mission and my team's part of the mission ends with us landing safely and getting those pictures down. But that's really just the beginning of this mission. That's the end of the beginning, if you will.
Right.
And just the beginning of the surface mission. And the surface mission itself is just the beginning of this grand relay race. We're really, at this time, trying to, in this campaign, bring back samples from Mars all the way back to Earth for the first time.
We were just talking to Katie Stack Morgan about what it will be like in terms of and why you chose this particular crater to land in. Talk to me about that aspect of once the things are collected from that crater, how will you get it back? I know that you're not in charge of that, but how do we know that you'll eventually get to review that material and to analyze that material?
Well, some of the technologies that we're using to land here safely the first time are really what will help us get there again and land a rocket to bring those things back from Mars. First off, with Mars 2020, we couldn't be going to a site that's as scientifically interesting as Katie described to you without two new technologies we have that'll help us land safely, which are range trigger and terrain relative navigation. And those technologies will also be used in this sample retrieval mission that will land this bigger lander with a rocket to be able to take those samples from the ground and send them up into Mars orbit, where they'll meet with an orbiter there for return to Earth.
There's so many things that have to go right in each stage of this. Will you guys be able to relax at all for the next few years?
Yeah, I don't know that we've been relaxing for the last couple of years either, right? There's no partial credit here, right? Getting halfway there and then stumbling at the end, right? No one wants to be the person who drops the baton in our relay race here. So, you know, there's no rest for a while.
Alan, I was wondering, for someone like you who is now at really the top of your profession, if you want to call it that, can you talk to me about what inspired you to get into this field and into space exploration?
I always loved going outside to look at the stars at night. You know, did a lot of astronomy as a kid and broke out the telescope a whole bunch. I always like to joke that that I'm not good enough at physics to do astronomy as a actual profession. But I can solve F equals MA over and over again, so that makes me a pretty good engineer.
Yeah.
But that lets, I like to build things, I think, is the short version, right? That I now try to make those types of discoveries possible.
All right, Alan, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you a question that I asked Katie a moment ago, which is, how will you feel if someday they say Al Chen helped to discover life on another planet? We'll be right back with that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we're back with Al Chen. He's in charge of entry, descent, and landing for the Mars 2020 Perseverance rover mission. Al, the crater that you've actually chosen to get to, you were telling me off camera that in the past, the technology was such that you didn't feel comfortable going to this crater, but that's changed.
Yeah, that's correct. We had considered this landing site for past missions like Curiosity, but had deemed it too unsafe. The scientists really love this site, right? They have you can see evidence of this ancient river flowing in there, and then this river delta that was deposited there after the lake, as the lake was there in the past. And they can see the promise, right? This is the right place to go from a scientific perspective to seek the signs of past life. But when I look at it as a landing guide, I see danger all over the place, right? There's there's that cliff edge, the delta has left this cliff edge that runs right through the middle of the landing site. Although you can't see them that well from some of the overhead pictures, there are rocks, I promise you, to the east of that cliff edge, and boulder fields that would be a bad day for our rover. Looking to the west, there's a giant crater out there that's a kilometer wide and full of sand. Even if we were to land there safely, the rover wouldn't be able to drive out. So these are all the things that kept us from going to this site in the past. One big piece that we've added to our system since Curiosity is a system we call terrain belted navigation. It's really about giving the spacecraft eyes and a map to be able to do something on the way down and fly to safe spots that are nearby. Instead of just taking pictures kind of like a tourist on the way down after heat shield separation as we're looking at the ground, we start taking those pictures and compare them to onboard orbital maps. We can use those maps to figure out where we are, and then once we get into that powered flight period where we're firing up those engines, we can fly to a safe spot that's nearby. So that's really allowing us to go to this place, because instead of having to have the entire site be flat and boring as a parking lot or some kind of landing strip, we can have little spots that are interspersed throughout there and safe targets that are interspersed throughout that site, and we can fly to the nearest reachable one.
Amazing. If at the end of this mission you do find signs of life, your name will forever be linked with the discovery of life on another planet. Can you tell me what that will feel like for you?
I mean, that's incredibly humbling. This is probably one of the biggest scientific campaigns we've ever tried as a human race. I'm just happy to be able to play a part in that.
When you were a young person thinking about going into this field, were there ever moments where you thought, oh, that's just way above me? And I don't mean physically in terms of space, but the idea that you would someday be leading a portion of this mission.
I think young Al Chen would be certainly elated to find out where he wound up, and maybe a little bit surprised, right? There's always a little bit of fortune and good luck to happen to stumble into the right places. And I feel very fortunate to have gotten the opportunity to do this.
I ask you that because I suspect young people who are listening right now will think, well, yeah, I'm good in math. I see things differently sometimes than other people. I may have an aptitude in this field, but that's not for me. How am I going to get into that? What would you say to them?
I would say that, you know, if you really want it, you can go for it. And you actually don't even necessarily need, we need people of all sorts of types, right? It doesn't have to be just people who are into math and science. It takes people of all sorts to make these missions possible. So, you know, diversity is really a big deal for us in terms of diversity of thought, because that takes us to places that we may not have considered. And that helps us, in the end, have success by making sure that we've covered all our bases.
When you were describing the powered descent and how it's autonomous, I wondered and I thought about the moon landing, the first one, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, having to take control because yeah. they realized that they were going in for a bad spot and they had to take control of the craft. Do you wish you could do that if you had the opportunity to control the spacecraft in real time?
The great thing about our terrain relative navigation system is that we built Neil Armstrong into the system. So by taking a look at the ground there, he's doing what Neil did, right? Neil looked out the window and assessed where he was based on the landmarks that were going by and where he was going to end up and decided that wasn't for him. And that's what our terrain relative navigation system really does. It takes a look at where we're going and where we are and projects out to where we're going and then tries to find the safest spot that's nearby. So, you know, I think we have a little bit of Neil Armstrong already built in.
If, God forbid, this becomes one of the 60% of Mars missions that don't make it to the surface successfully, how will you process that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a lot of pressure, right? We've been working on this mission for 8.5 years for these 7 missions to go right. You know, everything's coming down to this. That being said, right, the you know, one of the mantras at JPL is to dare mighty things, right? That we will always try to push the boundaries of what's possible, to seek to inspire the rest of the world to do that as well. And we will always step forward, right? We will always move forward. If this, if we have a problem, we will learn from it. And we have built the system such that it will report on how it's doing throughout entry, descent, landing, so that if something were to go wrong, we will be able to learn from it and make it better for the next time.
This is such an accomplishment, and I would imagine the apex of your career, but you're a young guy, and there's a lot of space to explore, a lot of planets to explore. Have you thought about anything beyond this mission?
I certainly thought a lot about the future, but for me right now, it's just making sure that we land safely. We want to make sure that we get this this sample return campaign off the right step. Maybe someday in the future, we can I can come help finish the job. But my job is clear right now. Make sure that we get that that first step.
Well, Al, we are going to be rooting for you every step of the way, and I hope we'll be able to chat with you after a successful landing on Mars.
I hope so, too.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
All right. Hope you enjoyed today's audio podcast. If you'd like to see the conversations we had on KTLA, you can check it out right now on YouTube. Just search for Frank Buckley Interviews and Perseverance Rover. It should come up for you. You'll see the terrific animation that will help you to better understand what this mission will look like as Perseverance arrives at 12,000 miles an hour at Mars and slows to 2 miles per hour. And I hope you'll share today's podcast and the YouTube video with young people who are thinking about careers in space or engineering to inspire them. You can also retweet or share the content from my social media channels. I'm at Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram. We drop a new audio podcast every Wednesday, and we air our TV shows every weekend on KTLA. Thanks for joining us this week, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.